Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
What is your Game 7 story? And when you look back on the series, what kind of jumps out? And it wasn't until today that that my sort of like look back on the series takeaway sort of came into focus. I think there's a thousand things. When you get that many games and that much going on, there's all kinds of things you can focus on. A handful of days ago, the physicality of the series. And there's all kinds of talk about Dylan Brooks and Draymond Green and all of their action on the court and people slapping it. Steph Curry's thumb and the Warriors' brains versus the youth of the Rockets, and then the Rockets with their rebounding edge and their athleticism. All of these things were kind of in the hopper. And then we pop out the other side of the series, and for me, it felt like going through a tunnel and coming out the other side of the tunnel and then going, okay, like, what are you actually looking at here? And it dawned on me, and this is really nothing more than a huge compliment to the emotional fortitude of the Golden State Warriors. I look at this series and I go, wow, all of the adversity was on one side. All of it. All of the adversity was on one side. And I'm sure Houston would be like, hold on a second. We had to deal with this, that, or the other. Sure, there's the stuff that's baked into a series. You're frustrated by the refs one night. Somebody else gets hot. Buddy Hield for 33. Are you kidding me? Same thing we felt about Fred VanVleet back in game number 4. It's like, what the hell kind of a heater is this guy on? But the actual out-of-your-control adversity of Jimmy Butler missing 2 games and Steph having a golf ball in his thumb and Pods missing a game 6 and GP2 missing a game 6 and the fact that the Rockets started with home court advantage. The fact that the Rockets finished with home court advantage. And if you want to throw this in, the fact that Steph Curry, after games 1 through 3, really kind of went through what for him is a bit of a dead zone. All of that happens, and then I go to look at the Rockets. I go, okay, what did the Rockets deal with? An empty injury report the entire series?
I'm going up against 2 players who are 4-time champs.
Well,
and,
sure, but
you know,
that's like baked in, though, right? I mean, like, that's just the matchup.
It's still adversity, and you have a team that's never been in the playoffs before, for the most part. I know that VanVleet had, and Steven Adams had, as your 7th man.
But, and Brooks had, sure.
Right, but other than that, like, most of your other guys have never been through it before, so it's not adversity that comes from injury, but it's adversity nonetheless, and you have to figure out how you go through it. And the adversity is that you go down 3-1 and you win 2 straight games, and you know, you get the thing back to Houston on your home court.
Yeah, they battled back. I give their sort of emotional fortitude. I give them high marks on that as well, just for battling back. But as far as things that aren't baked in that just sort of showed up in the middle of the series that you have to deal with, that team was 100% healthy. The entire time, they were 100% healthy. Nobody got sick. Nobody this, nobody that. I'm sure there are things, like with any story, that we don't know about that were going on behind the scenes. But as far as this idea If I had thrown this scenario at you before the series started, if I had said Houston would start with home court advantage, they would finish with home court advantage, I would tell you that Steph's thumb would swell into where look at
making. Well, he came into the series with a bad thumb,
right? But right. I don't think it looked that bad as it did in the middle of the series when that picture was taken. Like he's got a growth in his thumb. If I literally just said Jimmy Butler's going to miss two games, you already would have been like, oh, bleep.
That's trouble.
Right? And then Pods is sick and GP2 is sick and you throw all that into a bucket. If I had said that to you before the series, I think most people would say Warriors are going to have a hard time winning that series.
But if I also said that, you know, the older team is going to have injuries and the younger team won't, you probably wouldn't have been that surprised by that because you watched Amen Thompson last night. He took a fall that Jimmy took and that Steph took and that they've all taken. You saw him, his knee buckled and he went down and he fell hard and he's 22. He got up and he was fine because he's 22.
I don't know if he was fine. Like, I hear you, but he also had to leave the game. And in fact, on back-to-back possessions, Steph went right by him on one possession. And then the next possession, Thompson flat gave up because he couldn't move.
He didn't miss two games.
Yeah, but
he was able to come back and still play basketball,
but
is my point.
That five-point run at the start of the fourth quarter effectively ended Houston's run at the end of the third.
Yeah, I think the end of the third is what, and the start of the fourth maybe as well, but they were in trouble already.
Yeah, exactly. No doubt. I don't disagree with you on that.
I just think that if you look at an older team and you look at the fact that they sustained injuries that were, you know, like Steph didn't miss any time.
No, he
was able to play through it. And Draymond's been quote unquote injured for what, 5 years now?
Apparently. I mean, that's the other thing. The injuries they sustained, I don't really consider to be old man injuries. Like Jimmy Butler's injury, that's not because of age. That's a horrible fall that would hurt anyone of any age. And Steph's thumb, like I look more at like the muscular type of stuff. Is the stuff that I would be worried about when 37-year-olds are playing 22-year-olds. But these injuries were different than that, and whether it makes sense or not, they still had to deal with it. And all of those things happened. The adversity was on the Warriors' side for sure, and they still won the series. That's what stands out to me. Dustin in San Mateo is next up on Willard and Dibs. Hi, Dustin. What you doing?
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to give a quick shout-out. I know we're talking about sons and our experience. So me and my son celebrated his 18th birthday yesterday, May the 4th, in an awesome way. We had dinner at Momo's across from Oracle.
Nice.
Sarah High School represent. And then we rolled down to the Chase Center for the second half, for the after party, the watch party. And it was unreal energy. It was like classic Game 7 vibes. It was an incredible father-son moment. Win or lose, that's what being a fan is all about.
No doubt, Dustin, I love it. You know, those road playoff games, and I know the Warriors throughout history, thanks, Dustin, of Chase Center at times have done that even inside the building, maybe not for the early rounds, but I remember doing that for Game 4 against the Boston Celtics, actually inside the building. They've now developed this situation where they're doing it outside the building. I do want to let everybody know that there is no official Warriors watch party tomorrow night for Game 1. At Minnesota, because the Valkyries have their first ever preseason game tomorrow night at Chase Center. So no watch party tomorrow, but there will be more coming. There will definitely be one Thursday. And if you have not experienced this for Warrior Road games, you should. You should. It's really something else. And he's not wrong. The energy down there at Thrive City for these road games is something to see. It's pretty special.
Yeah, a lot of people getting together. And, you know, when it's inside the arena, it's crazy because you get 10,000 people and you're all watching on the big screen up above. But something about being out there on Thrive City and the plaza is even better because you're outside in that amphitheater and everybody crowding around and you get a chance to, again, watch it on the big screen outside the arena.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome. And Splash also. I watched, what game was that you went to? Was that 3 or 4?
Four.
That was 4,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Christy and I watched that at Splash. Energy in there was absolutely out of control. It was wonderful in there. So just something to think about as suddenly, I know most of us spent most of the weekend thinking, well, that's probably it.
Yeah.
No, we got a bucket more full of games now. Tomorrow night, Thursday night, Saturday night at Chase, Monday night at Chase at a minimum. And then very probably, at least, then Game 5 would be Wednesday back in Minnesota. And if the series continues on beyond that, Then the following Sunday, we'll be back here at Chase Center for game number 6. And then if this thing goes 7 again, that would be 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Tuesday in Minnesota.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that if you get to a game 6, you have Thursday, Friday, Saturday off.
3 days off.
I mean, that's huge.
It's huge.
If you happen to be down 3-2, and you know, if the home team holds serve, right, you'd be down 3-2, and you'd get 3 days off to come back here for game 6 the week after Mother's Day, that'd be awesome.
Let me ask you this, because you and I threw this out a lot on Friday, and I'm not going to take back the take yet, but at the same time, like always, it's one of those things where you arrive at your new destination, maybe you have a little bit of a different perspective, but you and I were both on the same page going into Friday night. I'm like, they have to win this one.
Yep.
Not that they couldn't win Sunday, but even if they did win Sunday, I don't like the situation that leaves an older team in to then hop a flight to Minnesota and be ready to go 48 hours later to buckle up and do this all again. And so that's what happened. And so now as we sit here today, do we sort of feel like the Warriors are not adequately set up for this series that starts tomorrow night?
They are.
Or do you feel differently?
Well, I feel that they're adequately set up as long as they get a split. And I do think that when you look at game one tomorrow in Minnesota, and we can get more into this idea tomorrow, but I think that if I'm Steve Kerr and I approach tomorrow's game after what we just went through, I'm thinking about playing 10, 11, 12, even 13 guys. I'm not playing.
Really?
I'm not going into game one playing Jimmy Butler 45
and
Steph 40.
Yeah.
I'm playing these guys, you know, 30 to 32. I'm going to make sure that I give everybody a chance to get in there. I'm going to use as many fresh legs as I can tomorrow.
Yeah, we can talk about this more tomorrow. I agree with you on the minute total for the starters. I don't know if I agree with you with how far down the bench I'm going. I'm keeping my rotation, my 8-to-9-man rotation. I'm going to try to win the basketball game.
I'm going to try to win the game as well, but I'm going to expand a little bit deeper and, you know, think about the Rockets series where Jonathan Kuminga started a game and he played in 3 games and he was all but buried, and he probably still is buried. And Quentin Post, he played a bunch in a game, and then he didn't play at all last night. So I do think that you look at it, and all players are on the table in terms of you might get a chance to get in there. Pat Spencer might get 8 minutes.
You're bringing up names that suggest to me the Warriors are down by 25. That's all.
Not necessarily.
I mean, yes, they're on the table.
Yeah.
I would leave them
Pat
there.
Pat played last night, and they were not down by 25.
I mean, he logged a total of 0 minutes. I know he went in with
8 seconds.
With 8 seconds left to go.
They were not down 25.
Quentin Post did actually play. He played 3 minutes last night.
And you know what I noticed?
What?
Is when they went to that last-second GT lineup, garbage time?
Yeah.
Kuminga. They put him in there for that.
It was TJD.
Yep.
Gee.
Yep.
Pat.
Yep.
Kuminga. And who? Who was the last one in? Was it Moody?
And Noxie?
Post?
No,
Knox didn't
get on.
Knox and Braxton Key did not go in. Anyway, we're sponsored by Cache Creek Casino Resort. We'd like to let you hear a little bit more of what Buddy Hield had to say on 95.7 The Game earlier today, plus a lot of the things that guys had to say after the game on the podium last night. The Warriors are into round 2, and we're taking your phone calls all afternoon long. So now that you're done with it, look back on the 7 games. What's your takeaway? And what is your game 7 story? We would love to hear it. 888-957-9570. We'll take your calls right now on Willard and Dibbs.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable 6-blade shaves, Swift Rinse and 4 blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Curry at midcourt, dribbles on Adams, ridden out far side, goes all the way in, takes the hit, uses the inside hand and scores, low left. Don't give me threes, I don't care, I'm going to get to the bucket. And Curry now is 17. Dub Nation, it's the voice of the Warriors, Tim Roy. You're listening to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
All right, Game 7 is in the Warriors' hip pocket for the third time in Steph Curry's career. He's won a Game 7 on the road. And the Warriors are on to Minnesota. This is Willard and Dibs. We're taking your calls, 888-957-9570. Buddy Hield was on this morning with the roast. We'll play some of that for you. He's awesome. No one's ever questioned his personality.
No.
That's for sure. I also do want to address this real quick. Boxer and Gerson work injury attorney's text line. I get why somebody will feel this way. You, Dibs, will agree with what this person is saying, but I want to explain myself.
Yeah, we'll see.
Okay, because it's 650. Mark, you really ought to change your tone when you talk about Pat Spencer. He's shown a ton. I want you to understand where I'm coming from. I know that sometimes that can sound like I'm taking personal shots at Pat Spencer's game. I'm not. I'm talking about the role he plays with the Golden State Warriors. Pat Spencer comes in basically one of three scenarios. Scenario one, the Warriors are up by a bucketful. Scenario two, the Warriors are down by a bucketful. Scenario three, a bunch of people who were supposed to be available are not available. It's the only time Pat has come in, and that's just a fact. So I love what he does when he's out there. He is fearless, and he's obviously a tremendous athlete, and I'm glad that he's on the Warriors. But the Warriors have roles. They've all got roles. And his role is not to go out there and play playoff minutes when the Warriors are at full strength and in the game. That's just not his role. So that's all I'm saying with that. He came in this series because Pods was sick and Jimmy got hurt and he got thrown in. He came in game five, Warriors down by 30. Like, that's when he comes in. So when I say I don't want to see him, it's because at least two of the three scenarios of him coming into the game are bad. It means the Warriors are down by 30 or somebody got hurt. Now, if the Warriors are up by 30, awesome. I'm not really foreseeing that tomorrow night, but awesome if it goes that way. That's all I'm saying, is nothing about Pat the person or the player at all. And he's not the only one I would refer to.
Right.
TJD and others are the exact same thing for me. I want the Warriors in the playoffs to have their 8/9-man rotation, draw from it, give everybody their normal minutes, hope for good health and good basketball. That's what I would do. That's what I think Steve will try to do tomorrow night.
But I look at what you're describing as their 8/9-man rotation, and it's been in that last series, it was more of a 8/7-man rotation. And I know part of it was because Gary got hurt, but I'm looking at the total minutes played. Kevon Looney played 65 minutes in seven games.
The whole time.
That's 9 minutes a game.
Yep.
So he's not in a 8 or 9-man rotation. I mean, he got crumbs. And Gary played about 15, 16 minutes a game, and he missed a game because he had the flu, so he's in. Quentin Post, he played about 15 minutes a game, 16 minutes a game.
He was in a lot. I know his average got knocked down.
He was in, but then he was out.
Because of last night.
My point is, going into game one, and we can get into this a lot more tomorrow, and 888-957-9570, we're basking in a game seven win, because I mentioned this on Friday about game six, and I said, this is the sauce. Not Sauce Gardner, but this is the S, the sauce. This is why you love sports, I do, Grandy, Lucas, fans. Like, last night is why we love sports. We had dinner, I had my family over, and it was, you know, everybody shut the blank up because we're watching the game. And, you know, our deal is that my wife cooks and I clean, and so luckily these NBA games, you get a 3-minute TV timeout, and so, you know, you get to the TV timeout, and I go in there and I'm trying to do a little cleaning, and then the game's back on. It's like, boom, sink off, dishes, whatever, game.
Yeah.
And this is what we love. But
yeah.
I think about game one and, you know, a tired veteran team in a very tough spot against a rested team. Well, I would not be against having him stretch that thing out a little bit tomorrow.
Yeah, I would. And I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
But I look at this as like you go right back to the starting gate. And the starting block is it's a playoff game. You're not resting people. Yes, you're not pushing them to 42, 43, 45 minutes. We're not doing that.
Yeah.
But I absolutely would have them scratch the bottom level of 40. I mean, they're not playing a back-to-back. Jimmy Butler can have 38. Steph Curry can have 36 tomorrow night. And if Gary Payton, we don't know this yet, but if GP2 is back and healthy, you get your rotation of GP2 and Moody and probably a little bit of Quentin Post and a little bit of Kevon Looney, and that's your rotation. and you get guys a little bit of rest. But good Lord, you try to go win that basketball game tomorrow night.
Of course.
You've got to try to win that basketball game tomorrow night.
You need to win one of the two, is my point.
You do, but, like, you know, look, it's right. And therefore, I think max effort for both of them is in order. This is where you're at. Like, the Warriors are not good enough to just be like, we got to lay back a little bit in a game or two here because we're tired. This is the assignment, and you got to go try to win it. And I will, to the smallest degree, kind of back off, at least in a provisional way, back off my statement Friday of that if they get to game seven, it just doesn't leave them in good shape for this series. I do still feel that way, but there's a piece of me that goes, ugh, it's a totally different matchup. It's a totally different matchup, and I do see certain spots on the court that make me feel like this is a better matchup for the Warriors than the Rockets were. I loved that matchup at the start just because they were so young. But physically, some of the things the Rockets can present defensively to the Warriors, the T-Wolves can't. And so the T-Wolves might be more consistent shooting the ball from the outside for sure. They're more dynamic. They're more experienced. All of those things. But I also do not think they are the defensive animal that the Rockets are. And I think Steph Curry is going to have a much, I don't want to use the word easier. I think the floor is going to be much more open and free for Steph than it was in this last series.
Interesting. Put it that way. But that could be part of it. And I do think that you're right as far as, and Steph even said it, I think, at the end of last night's game, that was one of the toughest defenses he's ever faced.
He did say that, yeah.
It's because of Ime Udoka, and it's because of the zone and their approach and the fact that they had Amen Thompson, who's young and a very good defender. He's probably going to be first-team all-defense or second-team at the very least. And so, yeah, very difficult. I do think that Minnesota presents different defensive issues. For example, getting to the rim is going to be near impossible when Rudy Gobert is on the floor. He's one of the best shot blockers in the modern game. And I do think on the other side of the ball, Julius Randle is going to be a tough cover.
He's,
and that's going to be Draymond Green.
They're tough.
Yeah. He's going to have to guard Randle. And so
they're good.
They're good. Is a load.
Yep.
Şengün is a load, but Şengün's a little bit more finesse when he gets to the bucket. Randle can bring you out to the three-point line. He can do a little bit off the dribble. He can get you down to the deep water. So I don't want to get too far into the Minnesota tape, but I think what you're saying is partly right in terms of Steph, but defensively, they're still a really good team.
Yeah, no, nobody's left who's not good. You know, really good on both sides of the ball. Nobody's left. Let's go to Paul in Oakland. Hey, Paul, thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, good afternoon. So back in the 70s, Saturday Night Live, the name of the comedy troupe, Bill Murray, Eddie Murphy, etc., they were known as the Not Ready for Primetime Players. Houston Rockets, the 2025 NBA version of the Not Ready for Primetime Players. Younger, more athletic, length. I'm not sure that they're more talented basketball players, but in terms of the length and the youth and those things, obviously, dominated the series in most of the stat categories, had opportunities to win the thing in five games, and they didn't. And they, I think as the series went on, their flaws, even though they won games five and six, I think their flaws got exposed, and there's no question, if you watch the last quarter and a half, they were the team that was gassed, out of sorts, spent emotionally, spent physically, and definitely not ready to play in a game seven. Moving forward with Houston, I think they've got to really evaluate their style of play, because I think it's conducive for maybe an 82-game schedule. But when you get into a seven-game, got to win four out of seven, you got to be better than what they are. And maybe the coaching style and the coaching approach has to work differently. It worked for the Pistons back in the day, but this isn't the same NBA. And the Pistons thing didn't sustain itself, and the Pistons also had Isaiah Thomas. And I don't think the Rockets have an Isaiah Thomas on their roster.
Yeah, they need some I don't want to call them upgrades. Paul, thanks. You've obviously been watching the league for a long time. Houston.
Since the 70s.
Yeah, Houston has a real decision to make this offseason. Stay the course with all their young guys, or is it time to cash one or two of them in and go get Chase KD or Giannis or whoever may be available this offseason? I don't know who else might be available. That's going to be an interesting play. I do push back on a little bit. There was one sentence early in his call where he said that they dominated in most of the stat categories, had an opportunity to win the series in five games. I didn't really see it that way. I know that they dominated rebounding. We told you that was going to happen before the series even started, though. They're a phenomenal rebounding team. Was there anything else where they dominated the stat category the rest of the way? It's funny. I mean,
missed free throws.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I thought this series, it went a little longer than I thought it would, but in the end, the dynamics of it were pretty predictable, which is Houston's youth and athleticism is going to win maybe a game or two. The Warriors' brains are going to win a game or two, and then let's see who makes shots and kind of outlasts each other from there. I thought it would take six games. It took seven, but the characteristics of the teams I thought were pretty evident before they even started playing games.
And the way it played out, I thought was pretty typical, pretty standard. And if my math is correct, they scored the exact same amount of points in seven games.
You're kidding me.
The two teams.
You're kidding me. It's dead tied.
Warriors were plus 10. Rockets were plus 15. So Rockets by five.
Yeah.
Warriors win by 11. They're plus six. Warriors by three. They're plus nine. Rockets by 15.
They're plus six.
Rockets by eight. They're plus 14. Warriors by 14. This game is tied.
How about that?
Yep.
How about that?
So,
they scored the exact same number of points in seven games.
Right.
Damn.
And, I mean, just the Rockets rebounded it way better. The Warriors turned it over a little bit fewer times. Effective field goal percentage, very close. And it really came down to one thing and one thing only, in my opinion. Warriors shot 77% from the foul line. The Rockets shot 70.
Yeah.
And
I mean, in games, in a
game
series
four,
that close.
For sure, yeah.
And again, we can all kind of pick our thing. For me,
you're right about this, yeah.
Yeah, we were banging on this drum all week last week. Just don't turn the ball over. Like, you're not going to let Houston open up the floor and get fast break points. If you don't turn the ball over, you win. The Warriors won the turnover battle four times. They won those four games. The Rockets won it three times. They won those three games. And then the other thing, and it doesn't sound like you quite see it the way I do, which is fine, but I really do think it speaks volumes. When you tell me the Rockets dominated certain categories, and I look at the adversity the Warriors faced, forget all the other things I keep bringing up. Just the fact that Jimmy missed two games. Just that fact alone, I would think, most people would have predicted the Warriors to lose the series if I had told you that before it started. If I said, okay, here you go, make a prediction on the series. Okay, now do it again. Jimmy's going to miss two of the games.
Well, he missed one game. He missed a game in three quarters. I get it.
Right.
He was not
really there to have an effect on two of the games. And that alone, to me, makes the series closer, even though the Warriors went out and won one of those games. So I think the Warriors faced a lot more adversity than the Rockets did. When you add in the illnesses that certain players had to have sitting out and the fact that Steph was clearly dealing with something on his hand, that's just kind of my perspective on it. But I don't think the Rockets dominated anything other than rebounding. And they're like the best rebounding team in the NBA. So I get it.
And the Warriors are number five in rebounding. Yep. So it's not like the Warriors aren't able to hold their own. For me, the whole series came down to what you call the pivotal, even-numbered games, and you're not wrong, and I may have to someday get over on your side of the ledger because I've always thought it was game five and whatnot, but the most pivotal game in this series was the game I was at, you were at Splash, and it was game four. And you look at the way that game went, the Rockets were 19 of 31 from the line, 61%. The Warriors were 20 of 22. So the Rockets got nine more free throws, and they had one fewer make in the game. So for me, turnovers, yes, you're right. Rebounding, sure. Possessions, shooting. When Fred VanVleet was on fire, you had no answer. When Jalen Smith had a monster game, you had no answer. You lost those games. Game four, Everyone was on the floor. Everyone was healthy. I know Jimmy was still coming back. Yep, he played 40 minutes, so I'm not going to say that he was not healthy.
No, but
he played 40 minutes.
It was clearly in pain.
Let's he had just 27 points.
It was clearly in pain.
Fine, but I'm not going to say that Jimmy was hampered.
No,
Jimmy was amazing.
Yep, he played.
Both teams were at their best, and the Warriors won the game.
And it all, I mean, Şengün, turnaround, 11-foot jump hook, bounce, bounce, out. And the Warriors win. And that, I mean, that thing.
That's the series.
That thing could have gone in.
That's right.
It could have gone in. The Warriors would have had a chance to go down and score at the buzzer, but still, it could, this absolutely, that could have turned it the other direction.
So I think the series was that close where.
In the end.
Even in the middle. Game four, if Houston wins that game, now it's 2-2, and it's a whole nother ballgame.
But exactly, which could have twisted it in a different direction.
Sure.
Game five. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to say the Warriors took their foot off the gas and all that. But there's an energy flow.
Well, they stunk.
Yeah, there's an energy flow to the series. And teams play with desperation when they're facing elimination. So if Şengün's shot goes in and it's a 2-2 series tie, I can still very easily see this series getting to a Game 7. Like, the Rockets don't come out in Game 5 with their butt on fire. And the Warriors might have a little bit more desperation. Maybe those two games, 5 and 6, play out a different way and the Warriors get one of them. I don't know. But I'm not disagreeing with you. It got very tight, tighter than I thought it would be. Let's go to Jonathan in the city. Hi, Jonathan. Thanks for calling.
Hi, how's it going? I don't know if anyone said this yet. I know we're praising Buddy Hield a lot, but really saved Steph Curry's legacy. I was wondering if you agreed. We talk about.
Yeah, Jonathan, just me, and thank you for calling, but good Lord, could not disagree more.
So he's no longer top 10 all time lose that game?
This is the stuff that kind of triggers me, to be honest with you, okay?
Did LeBron's legacy get tarnished by the fact that they just lost in 5 to Minnesota?
Like, we started the show last night by saying this. No, Granny, the answer is no. The show last night by saying this. This is such the social media thing that we do to these guys. One of them's 40 years old. The other one's 37. Their plaques and their statues and everything are completely cemented. Everything is in ink. We're really in the bonus stretch of their careers, to be honest with you. We are. We're in the bonus round. We got to stop. There's nothing that these two guys can do to take them off of the top 10 plaque. Nothing. There's nothing that can happen the rest of the way. Like, they're literally doing what they're doing well beyond when many people said they were done, and they're still out here doing it. They're still being playoff performers. Did LeBron's team have a quick exit? Sure it did, but they won 50 games, and I actually thought he was more impressive than his 25-year-old superstar counterpart on his own team. LeBron was better than Luka was in that series. And so, no, their legacies are done. They can grow, but they cannot diminish, in my opinion, at this point in their career.
I agree with you. And the only diminishing would be something off the court that is of a felonious or calamitous nature. Then we can talk about a tarnishing of a legacy. And if you want to look at the NBA playoffs right now and the remaining 8 teams, there's some legacies that can be burnished and improved, certainly.
Absolutely.
You look at Boston, and if Brown and Tatum are able to go back-to-back, well, now they take about 3 or 4 steps up the ladder in terms of, doing something that not that many tandems have done. Anthony Edwards is trying to become that dude.
Yep.
And if you get to the Western Conference Finals and you beat the Warriors, well, that's a notch in your on your bedpost there.
I think there are 3, maybe 4. I don't know. The Pacers, I can't tell from night to night who their quote-unquote best player is, from Halliburton to Siakam to Turner to on and on and on. They're kind of like, they remind me of the Pistons that beat the Lakers.
Remind me of the Raptors who beat the Warriors.
Yeah, well.
A good, solid collective.
Right, absolutely. Kawhi and whatnot. But I think there are at least 3 players who can do that, join the legacy group.
Yep.
And it is Anthony Edwards, it's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and it's Donovan Mitchell. That you can join the next level. And so, yes, you can really go up from there. And then, yes.
Yeah, Tatum and Brown can get into that elite club.
Maybe I left Jalen Brunson out and Karl Anthony Towns. I guess you could put them in there too, but I agree with you on Jalen and Brown.
Yeah.
Or Tatum and Brown.
Jason and Tatum, yeah.
Either one, yeah. And I guess Jokic is in that group too. Jokic is still playing? Well, yeah, they are. They had a game here in a couple hours.
I thought you threw dirt on them last week.
I was ready. If the Rockets win last night, I was going to be wrong in three of the four series.
Oh, boy.
Just picking the winner. That's supposed to be easy in the first round. I was about to be right in one of them, and it was the one that everybody knew, which is that Oklahoma City was going to beat Memphis.
Duh.
We knew that.
Yep.
But, dude, I for sure thought the Clippers were going to win that series. And I'll go to bed feeling like they would have if Aaron Gordon's finger was still on that ball. Was that game four? I think it was game four. So, split second away, I think the Clippers win that series. But they didn't. He won it. They did it. Good job. Nuggets win. I didn't think Minnesota would be able to handle the Lakers the way they did.
Right.
And we were one game away from being all kinds of wrong about the Warriors too. So I love the parity that especially the Western Conference is offering. Right,
wide
now.
Open, the wide open West.
Okay, 888-957-9570. We got a piece of the Buddy Hield interview from this morning with the roast that we're going to play for you. But absolutely plenty of time throughout the 5 o'clock hour for your phone calls as well. Idris, you'll lead us off, so stay right where you are. 888-957-9570. That is your number. What is your game seven or seven game series takeaway looking back on the whole thing? And what's your game seven story? 888-957-9570. We take your calls right now. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. Willard and Dibbs.
Curry on the logo. Comes left, crossover dribble, crossover again, step back, takes a three under, duress, it's good! It's good! Curry nails it! And it's 91-74, the Warriors have their largest lead of the game right now. Thompson will go in, forces up a left-hand shot, that doesn't go. Loose ball on the deck, Curry comes up with it, steps over Şengün, dribbles it to the front court, puts on the brakes, has Buddy Hield wide open, left corner, three ball on the way, he got it! It's a 20-point lead for Golden State, and the lights are starting to go down here in Houston.
Hey, Aries, it's Buddy Hield. You're listening to Willard and Dibbs on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, hello. This smells like Warrior spirit. This has been yet another journey, and I will stand right up and raise my hand and admit to a vibe that I hate. I hate, but dude, I went home Friday night very discouraged.
Yeah?
Very discouraged.
You were in the house, right? You and the lovely Christy.
No. We went to the game Friday night.
That's what
night.
I said. You were in the house.
Oh, like, I thought you meant like we were at our house.
No. We went to the game.
We was in the building.
You went to the game, right?
Yeah, we went to the game.
We went to the game.
Went to the game. We're in the house.
I got home like in 7 minutes.
What?
It was an unbelievable transportation sensation.
You thought it was going to be the
nightmare.
Opposite.
Right by Oracle Park, Giants game, onto the Bay Bridge.
Cha-ching!
Scoot through the tunnel. I got home for tip.
Dude.
I got home for tip.
That's crazy.
Wish I wouldn't have.
Got home for tip?
E-tip-ish.
I was going to say.
It might have been like 2 or 3 minutes later.
Damn.
It was, and I don't speed. You know me, I'm Captain 10 and 2.
Right.
Like, granny style.
I mean, unless somebody cuts you off.
Oh, then it's
those arms are out the window.
Yeah. Only one. One okay. Hand on the wheel.
Anyway. Yeah. No, that's impressive. But no, we were there, and I was prepared to faint. It was one of those games. I don't know if anybody has this experience when I'm really intense about a game. If there's really a moment, then I will cheer in such a way where the energy and the volume is so high that I can force myself into lightheadedness.
Oh my
and
God.
This I'm not like not proud of it, but I wanted this
one. You're spending
one.
So much CO2,
wanted, dude.
Not enough oxygen in,
yeah.
CO2 out.
I think there was a foul at one point called on the goon and he had to exit the game. And I let out a massive expletive. I was hot. I had it as my
goon?
As my mom often. I had had it up to here, Dibs.
He's just a kid.
I know, but you get caught up in all this stuff.
No doubt.
We got a 7-gamer here, and I was hot. And then there's these two, and they were lovely. Nothing against them, but these two ladies sitting next to us who are big Rocket fans. They might have been affiliated with someone in the organization. They kind of looked like that, where they were like, just Rocket gear, but we're not going to say anything. We're just focused solely on the game. I don't want to talk. We're not going to eat anything. We're just going to clap every time the Rockets score, and we're going to call him Alpy. Come on, Alpy, make your shots. And I'm like, you're really annoying me.
Oh, no.
Because I got a lot of energy for this one.
I hope you cussed one of those ladies out.
I did not. Okay. We did not share any thoughts at all. I was like, the way I handle that is I'm like, I'm not talking to you. I might rub shoulders. I'm going to ask you to get up when I need to go to the bathroom. But other than that, we're not talking. Christy's the complete opposite. Second she realizes they're Rocket fans, she just leans over and gets right in front of him and goes, oh, no. Oh, no. I didn't know you're rooting for the Rockets? Oh, no. That's not good.
Oh, no.
I have a whole conversation with him. I'm less like I'm keeping my eyes straight ahead because I'm focused on this goon and this Dylan Brooks jerk, and we're going to get him out of here. And Dibs, the Rockets played great and the Warriors played horrible, and I was very discouraged on the way home.
I bet.
And all of those thoughts about this show, this one, this show today, being a funeral to the Warriors season.
Dearly beloved.
They all filtered into my brain. And so last night was pretty satisfying.
Oh, it was pretty awesome.
That's pretty satisfying.
And I was telling everybody yesterday about, you know, hey, because you bump into people at the farmer's market, and they're like, you know, where are you watching the game? And it's like, I'm watching it at home. And, oh, boy, geez, I hope the Warriors win. And I look at these people like, you don't understand what this means to me. Personally, I've been a Warrior fan for, oh, I don't know, almost 50 years.
Right.
But professionally, like, them continuing to play basketball, it's good for business. And game sevens are good for business, but having another series is also good for business. So I got a lot of texts yesterday about like, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
More content. Yeah.
No, it's good for business. It's good for the soul.
It's good for the Bay Area. It's good for everything.
It's also just fun.
Yeah.
Look, let's be real. When you go up 3-1, you start making mental plans. I did. I'm like, okay, we're going to round two.
Yep.
They're up 3-1. 95. There's nothing in life that's going to happen 95% of the time that you don't start counting on.
Not even a Steph Curry free throw.
Right? Like, not even a Steph. Great analogy.
Because that's at about 91 for his career, roughly.
And when he goes to the
Brandy's,
line.
Correct me and buzz me. I know it's been a long time.
When he goes to the line, I put the points on the board before he shoots it.
Every time.
So I was already making plans.
Yeah, 91 for his career.
Yeah.
Oof, dodged a bullet there.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
So, like, we were, you know what I mean? I'm like, we got at least a couple more weeks of basketball, and this is going to be a blast. And then it feels like something got taken from you. That's how I felt Friday night.
Right.
I felt like something got taken from us.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
And, you know, Friday night was one of those ones where they just could never quite get over the hump and get on top.
Totally.
And I was looking at all these games, and I'll do a deeper dive on the Minnesota experience, but the one thing I've kind of been noticing about the Warriors is when they lead early and they keep the lead, they don't lose. And I know that all the blown leads and this and that during the regular season.
They've been a lot better lately.
They have been.
But
this game Friday night, when, you know, the Warriors are in a spot where they're up 3-2, and, you know, you want to avoid going to Houston. Houston led for 43 minutes and 13 seconds of that game.
They were the better team.
The Warriors led for a minute 41.
Yeah, it was not even a question. The Rockets were flat out a better basketball team on Friday night.
Yeah.
So I don't know how the hell, I said this earlier, you can be, not give up hope. That's fine. Don't give up hope. There's no way in hell you went into last night's game optimistic. Oh, yeah, they got it. No, if you felt that way, you're myopic, quite frankly. I don't know how you could feel that way going into the game.
And you know
last night.
Don't do myopia, but I did text you, Jesse Jackson, keep hope alive.
You said keep hope alive.
Keep hope alive.
And I said, yeah.
Of course.
But No.
Right. Yeah. And then I realized
it's not good.
It's not good. And then I looked at the spread and it was 2.5.
Because
I did one of these gambling shows yesterday afternoon. And I did it in my garage because the baby's asleep. And we're going through it. And he actually asked me, the two co-hosts, they're like, a prediction. If you had to make a prediction. And I said, well, the Warriors are my team. But if you're asking me to make a prediction, it's the Rockets.
Oh.
Like, the numbers indicate the Rockets. The home team wins 75% of the time in Game 7, and the Warriors have a bum thumb and a bum tailbone and an older team. The prediction, the bet, would have been the Rockets.
I know your life has not gone haywire, but I will tell you it sounds like it is when you say, so I did a gambling show in the garage.
Yeah.
Like that literally, like, if somebody says that to me, I'm like, I want to check on that person. We doing all right?
We're doing great.
You doing okay with
your life? Had you seen the backdrop of my, because you know, all these radio shows now, they want you to do video too.
Of course.
And so I'm like, I'm sitting out there in a folding chair. Like a
chainsaw behind you or something?
No, it was like.
Tool shed?
You know, like the overhanging wood structure of a garage and like a blank wall.
Like a loft up there?
A couple of rakes and a shovel. Yeah, call my message phone.
Exactly.
I like the under. Yeah. I did like the under at least. So
yeah, and you were right.
Yeah.
All right, so 888-957-9570. What's your Game 7 story? What's your takeaway from round one? Warriors moving on to round two in Minnesota tomorrow night. Idris in Hayward. Hi, Idris. Thanks for waiting. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? Doing a heck of a job over there. So my takeaway, first off, you know, shout out to Buddy Hield, but you know who really set the tone of that game? It was Draymond. He came out, had a layup, had a three, we're up five, hit another three. I said, whoa, okay, Draymond's here. Game 7, Dre is here, right? And then, you know, we started going well, Hield hit it. But I noticed that Steph Curry and Butler, they were struggling. They were literally keeping Houston in the game. And I know they played in the fourth, but that was because they were tired. So what I want to talk about is how is Steve Kerr going to get these guys rest on a different schedule? Because at the end of the day, I know people say you can't play your bench because we'll go down, but it shows that when our star players are tired, they play just as bad, sometimes even worse. And on the other side, Jabari Smith was killing us, and apparently the coach didn't like him or something like that. And I'm like, I think of the whole JK situation, he has been playing well, but when Steve Kerr throws him in those little spurts, like do something, it's almost like give him like a quarter or something in one of these beginning games because we're going to need JK to – give us some good minutes, and we need our stars to get rest. But other than that, go Warriors. You guys are doing a great job. What do you think?
Idris, thanks very much. Appreciate it. Listen, okay, there's two pieces here for me, and I want to say them both, hopefully with clarity. I agree with Idris. We are not in a spot where assessing Jonathan Kuminga in these little spurts off of weeks on the bench are fair.
No.
It's just not fair. It's not fair. So I'm not going to look at what you see, for example, in a game like last night and say, well, now Jonathan Kuminga sucks because of what you saw. I think it's fair to say, look, you were given a tiny little spurt and you did not do good things. You did not do what was necessary to make the team want to put you in for longer. That's just a fact. But I don't think it's fair to assess Kuminga. He's in a really, really difficult spot. Here's the other side to it. I keep hearing this, and I'd like to reject it. You ready for the sentence I'm done with?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to need him. No, you don't. I don't agree. I don't agree.
Well, they did need him when Jimmy was out.
I don't think...
He started, they won.
He started, they won. His minutes got actually truncated based on, I think, what the plan was, which has happened pretty much every time he's gotten put in
this
series.
Steve praised him, especially.
Of course he praised him.
Because that's what Steve does. But I did think he played good defense on Jalen Green.
Played pretty good defense.
And I agree that his minutes got truncated, which means limited. And I love your use of vocab here. It's SAT season.
It was a truncation sensation.
That's a buck, and I'll pay it because you're flexing the vocab, and I love that.
Thank you.
I do think that last night was an even bigger example of the truncation of the young man's minutes.
It's just like, I don't buy that the Warriors are going to need him. Like, take a look at what took place in the last month and a half with him not playing at all. What did the Warriors do? Hell, they went through a gauntlet. They beat Memphis and the Lakers and Denver and all of these things. And then they worked their way into the playoffs, and they win in a play-in game. and then they go to the playoffs, and they eliminate the two seed in seven games, and they've largely done all of this without him. So I just don't understand. It's not like, I hope this doesn't sound like, I'm sure it does, which is some sort of shot against Jonathan. It is that the Warriors have built what they're doing right now without him. A lot of that not being his fault because he was hurt. But they are a very good basketball team as constructed in this moment with him having not really been a significant part of it. I don't know why we're having this hard thing in the back of our minds. It's almost like it's guilt because he was hurt when Jimmy got acquired. There's this guilt in the back of our mind of, we're going to need him. We're going to need him to do this if we want to advance. We're going to need. I just don't agree. They're fine. They're a very good basketball team. If they stay healthy and play great defense, this can continue. I don't know that it will. It's really hard now. These are eight really good teams. The Warriors are not significantly better than any of the others, so it's going to be very difficult to advance. But this idea that at some point he's going to have to get the ha-ha out so that we can maneuver and advance in a series, I just don't buy it. I don't buy it. They just maneuvered forward literally without him doing much, and that's with Jimmy missing two games.
Right,
so, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, I see the idea that he may have a role. It may not be as big of a role as he used to, but they needed, quote-unquote, a lot of different players, and then they didn't need him either. Quentin Post was not needed in Game 7. He was needed for a while, and then he wasn't needed. So I look at, you know, strength in numbers. Maybe this isn't that because you're probably going to go with an 8- or a 9-man rotation, but over the course of a 4-, 5-, 6-, 7-game series, you might need a lot from a lot of different guys.
You might. You might. But you really, really, truly might not.
You might not. Like, well, I mean, look at Houston. Houston played 8 guys, basically, right, the entire series. Right. They didn't even go beyond the 8 in any game that was meaningful, and that's just what they did.
That's because they didn't have any injuries. The Warriors had.
And it's because they're younger, too, right, and they can do that.
But the Warriors did. The Warriors lost Jimmy Butler twice. They lost Pods once. They lost GP2 once. Like, they had injuries. That's why some of those other people, they had technicals and flagrants and just all kind of foul trouble. Like, that's what led to those guys coming off the bench. But if everybody's healthy and cool, like, no, the Warriors can win, and they don't, they're not going to, quote, need him. Yes, he has to be ready. Of course, that's the job of anybody who's got a uniform and shoes. But I don't think that he is some sort of future linchpin on what the Warriors are doing. Like, it's mid-May pretty soon here. It certainly will be by the time this series gets fully decided. Like, the Warriors are heading down toward the end of this whole thing, and he's not much a part of the rotation at the moment. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco and Odyssey Sports Station. Always live on the free Odyssey app, now coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios.